Hi Martin, how's it going?
Good, Nick. Yeah, how are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. LinkedIn told me it's your 3-year anniversary.
Oh, yes, it is. That's right.
I've sprung this on you, I didn't
know. No, a good old LinkedIn.
Happy birthday.
Yes, it is. It's about 3 years since the first launched Kids Club HQ, yeah. God, that's gone quick.
Crazy, isn't it?
It is. It's so crazy. I was talking about that. So, obviously, I was at MicroConf last weekend. Well, not obviously, but I was. And, I'd worked it out then, actually, that it was about 3 years, because I was talking to lots of people, and, you know, you have to give the backstory about 100 times. So every time you speak to a new person, you know, you're telling them the same story. It's frightening how quickly the time goes and how little you get done in many ways.
Indeed, yeah. Yeah, how was MicroConf Europe?
It was good, yeah, it was really good. It was in Dubrovnik this year, in Croatia, and the hotel was amazing, overlooking the sea. So that was a good bonus. All the rooms, so it was kind of in the side of a cliff face, the hotel. So all the rooms faced out over the sea.
Wow.
So that was nice. And there was like a terrace and stuff for the receptions in the evening. So it was good, yeah. I picked up a lot of stuff. It was a bit different this year to previous years. I think there were slightly less attendees. I can't remember how many they said now, but I think it was under 100. And I don't know what the reason for that is, but it was arranged a bit later this year compared to previous years. So maybe that was the reason why. But the audience was more people that have already got businesses that are just starting to grow, or quite big businesses, or that are growing. So it was less, you know, people that are just trying to get ideas or whatever. And, you know, with my selfish head on, that suited me a bit better, because I'm speaking to people that are already done stuff that can, you know, I can pick their brains and nick their ideas. Mm. So that was good. But yeah, overall, it was great. You could probably hear I've got a slightly croaky voice because of all the talking and drinking and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
But no, it was worth it. It was really good.
Well, they don't record the videos for the MicroConf Europe, do they? But I think they still publish their notes. So which talks were the ones to look out for the notes for?
So in fairness, the talks, there were some that were similar to previous years. Like Steli Efti did a talk that was good, but I kind of heard that sort of stuff before, because I've heard him talk before, you know, so I'd heard some of the things he was saying before. It was a good refresher all the same. The other ones, now you've put me on the spot because I can't remember people's names, which is going to create, hang on, I'll get my little note back. Yeah, so there's a girl called Ashley Baxter that did a good talk that was more around sort of validating your idea and moving forward on that basis. Customer development, you know, and that sort of thing. So it's more about from getting started and bootstrapping your product. But that was really good, a really good talk. And then one of the other ones that was a really good one was a lady called Ashley Green. She was doing a talk about user testing, or user research rather. You know, so getting people to actually test, use your product, or getting feedback from them about where you should be going with your product. And that was really good as well. Otherwise, the talks were pretty good. There's one about GDPR, which again, it's kind of one of those things that it's useful to see and you pick up some points from, but it's not going to get you out of bed in the morning, GDPR, is it? So, I mean, there are quite a few. Those are the two that I say would stand out.
Yeah, often the networking is the most valuable part of microconferences.
That's the most I got out of it. Like what they call the hallway track. Without doubt, that's the best bit of MicroConf. I mean, I'd go for it if there weren't any talks, to be honest. Mm. So good. Anyway, that's cool. What we're on about this week.
Indeed.
So, sanity check and what you've been up to for the past 18 months.
Yeah, so this isn't going to be as much about sanity check and as much about family life and my children. Yeah, so I listened to the last podcast, as I think we both said last time. And it's funny because the date that the last podcast that we were both on was published was when this kind of all kicked off. And so that was on Monday, February the 6th, if I'm right.
Yep.
And Charlie was a couple of weeks old then, and he had been having, he had a bad cough, I think. That was what made us make an appointment for the doctors. And so Sophie made an appointment at the doctors. I think it was just before lunchtime. And I'd gone into work. I'd gone into the Hive, the co-working space as normal. And I just, there's two stories about the kids being sick and stuff, and on both instances there's just a bit of a weird thing going on. And so for some reason I decided I'm just going to meet Soph at the doctor's. No, you know, we hadn't arranged this. I just thought, oh, well, it's around lunchtime. I'm going to walk into town. I'll go meet them. You know, perhaps we can go grab lunch afterwards or something like that. And it's a good job I did, because when Soph got to the doctor's with Charlie, he'd gone downhill quite a bit, and he'd kind of gone this grey colour. And as we were in the doctor's, almost the doctor said straight away, like, called for the nurse, and they brought some breathing equipment out for him. So he's kind of hooked up for that. And they rang 999 and called an ambulance. And he was kind of taken straight to Barnstaple Hospital.
Scary.
With breathing difficulties and stuff, yeah. And so that was at lunchtime. And he was put on, you know, the oxygen through the nose thing to start with. And then obviously messages is sats and so on for you know, percentage of oxygen in blood and all that kind of stuff. And he was slowly getting worse and worse, and his breathing was getting worse and worse. And in the end, I guess it was probably around 10 o'clock at night, they decided to incubate him, which is where they put the tube down his throat and breathe for him.
Yeah.
And at that point, we were told we were going to be going to Bristol, because although they could do that in Barnstaple, they didn't have the kind of the equipment and stuff to look after him long term on that kind of stuff.
Right.
But then we didn't know when we were going to be going, because there was another child who was in at the same time who had suspected meningitis. And there's like a South West and Wales specialist ambulance team for transporting really sick children. And so we didn't know whether they were going to be going first up to Bristol or we were going to be going first up to Bristol. And there's also a bit of a complication as well, where Charlie, when his breathing was getting bad and the oxygen levels were getting low, his eyes were rolling up to the back of his head. And so the doctors were kind of thinking, well, he's having seizures as well. And so we're obviously thinking, oh, crikey, what's going on there? So, yeah, I think around midnight, we got told, you know, we're going to be transferred over to this transfer bed that they have, which has all the life support equipment on. But that was quite complicated as well, because when they were transporting him over, he had so much kind of mucus in his throat and on his chest and stuff that the tube they put down his throat to intubate him, whichever it is, kept getting clogged up.
Right.
So then they try and transfer him over to this, you know, transfer bed. Then they'd have to move him back and manually, you know, bag him with the breathing thing and try and put the tube back down and get an X-ray to make sure he's okay. And this went on about three or four times and took about 3 hours to get done. And so he eventually got done okay. He had a CT scan downstairs at Barnstaple just before we left in the ambulance. And I remember asking one of the doctors kind of said he wasn't an expert CT scans, but everything looked normal. So we were kind of like, phew, that's one thing ticked off.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I think about 3 a.m, Soph was in the ambulance with Charlie, transported up to Bristol to the intensive care, the paediatric intensive care unit. And once we got there, kind of like things were a lot better just because of all the specialist equipment they've got there. In the intensive care room, there's 2 nurses per child. So even in Barnstaple, like in the, I can't remember, his high dependency unit he was in to start with.
Yeah.
It was, he always had a nurse with him. But just the fact, you know, all the equipment that they had there, and there was 2 nurses looking after him and 1 doctor like checking every half hour or so. And it was like just a big relief once we'd finally got there. And in the end, we were there for 4 days. And this is the list of things he had. There were a couple of others, I can't remember them all. He had flu, which I guess kicked it all off. He had croup and he had a partially collapsed lung. But the good news was there was no more seizure issues. So he had the whole electrodes put over his head and monitor his brainwave activity and that kind of stuff. And it was a bit of a chance. It would have been, you know, a long shot for him to actually have a seizure when they were actually doing that monitoring. But they did it anyway and monitored him for about an hour and he was all okay. So it was literally just, you know, flu that kicked it all off and led to the other issues. Mm. So, yeah, we were there for 4 days. We stayed in Ronald McDonald House.
Oh, right.
Which is a charity house where they put families up whose children are in intensive care. Because obviously Bristol caters for the whole of the southwest,
yeah,
even up to like as far as Worcester and I think maybe around places like that. So obviously it's a long way for lots of families in Cornwall and Devon to travel.
Yeah.
And so there's a couple of Ronald McDonald houses, although I think there's lots around the country at the major hospitals, but they were initially started, I think, or they're funded by the charity boxes that are at McDonald's restaurants.
Yeah.
And so on the counter you'll see, have you got any spare change, you know, put your change in here. And so all that money goes to funding these houses for families to stay at, you know.
Oh, that's really good.
When their children are in real difficulties and the families are having a hard time, so that was good. And it was kind of strange as well, having worked at McDonald's when I was a kid. I've seen those boxes around and stuff like that, so.
You've seen what they're there for now, yeah.
So that was quite good, yeah. And, we got home at the end of that week, so around Friday, I think. He kind of went back into hospital 2 or 3 times over the next month or two, again with breathing difficulties, but thankfully it wasn't quite so bad. He just had, you know, oxygen through the nose and stayed for a couple of days and was on steroids and antibiotics and so on. So, yeah, that was quite a stressful time, as you can imagine.
Yeah, I remember, I do remember it at the time, but listening to it all again, it's, yeah, Horrendous. I can imagine it's awful.
It's quite weird talking about it as well, because I've not spoken about Charlie's whole incident for quite a while. And when I've kind of made some notes to go through, and it's easy to write down the notes, but then when you're talking about it, it kind of all comes flooding back.
Yeah, I can
And
imagine.
difficult to talk about, but so yeah, that was all going on. We were also trying to move house as well, or get the house sorted. Yeah, we were moving house, so we completed it on our house that we were buying in December. But
Yeah.
we weren't supposed to move in until January.
That's right. I remember you were renting before then, weren't you?
That's right, yeah. But we had so many snags and issues because it was a new build. We put all of that back till March, and when that most of Charlie's issues were over. But to be honest, having gone through the whole process of buying a new house, a new build house, that's worth a podcast episode by itself. So won't get into those issues.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was a there was a pause of say a month or two of working on sanity check, and then I got back on it. There were still things going on, so obviously, even though you're in a hospital, you know you've got your laptop and got your phone. So I was doing stuff on Twitter, I guess, and marketing a bit. So there were still beta customers coming in, which was good. And so from that point onwards, I guess I got sanity check ready for, charging, because it was just a free beta from November up until we did start charging, which was in July. So yeah, any questions so far?
This is all the background I remember, yeah. I wasn't sure about this charging though. When did you start charging? Did you say July?
Yeah, so we've got the Isabel's illness to talk about first in
Yeah.
between all of that. So yeah, obviously we stopped doing the podcast because I didn't know when I was going to be available
Yeah.
and all that kind of stuff. And Charlie was in and out of hospital and in and out of doctor's appointments and so on. And the whole moving house and what
Yeah.
have you.
Yeah. So that was like February through till July, all that was going on. Then you started charging from July.
Yeah, July was when we turned the charging on, but it was I had it all sorted around May. But then this is where Isabel's illness comes in, which is what's kind of has
Yeah.
knocked us, or not knocked us, but taken center of mind for the last 12, 16 months.
Yeah.
And so yeah, this is it's another weird situation where for 2 or 3 weeks leading up to this, she had been feeling tired. She'd been moaning about her legs aching, she had a cough. And we just thought she was going through growing pains. She was obviously our oldest first child. She was 4 at the time, which I guess is a bit young to go through growing pains looking back on it in hindsight. But then she had a weird, really weird bruise on her back that we didn't remember her doing anything to get this bruise. And I played quite a bit of sport, football and stuff like that, and lunged into silly tackles and come out with big bruises and so on. But this bruise was like a bruise I'd never seen before. And looking back on it, these were all obvious signs that if we'd have known the symptoms and what to look for, I wouldn't say we'd have done anything quicker because it was only 2 to 3 weeks from, these things going on to diagnosis. But I know from some parents, things do go on a lot longer before they get their children diagnosed with what Isabel ended up coming out with. So yeah, we went. This is another where the strange situation is. So this was on the Friday morning or Friday Thursday night was when we noticed the bruise and she was having a bath. And by Friday, it got even worse. And Soph and I were supposed to be going back to Reading, oddly enough, on that Friday. So I was selling the camper van. I was selling it to a friend in Reading. Soph was driving back separately in her car, and I was driving a camper van back, and then we were going to all drive back in Soph's car. So Soph had already set off. And I wasn't happy about this bruise. So I said to Soph, look, I'm going to hang around and I'm going to take Isabel to the doctors. And I guess this is the strange bit, whereas if we hadn't done that, then the situation could have got a whole lot worse and could have got, been a whole lot different. So we got an appointment at the doctor's. As soon as we went into the doctor's and he saw the bruises, he kind of said, this is quite serious. I'm going to have to refer you straight to Barnstable again, which is our nearest main hospital. And I kind of knew it was serious as well, which is why, I hung back and made this appointment and took Isabel to go. I knew something was up. And so I drove her up to Barnstable. And the first doctor we saw, pediatric doctor said, this is serious. Do you know what it could be? Have you done any Googling? I've always tried to stay away from Googling symptoms and stuff. And I said, no, I haven't. And then she came back again and she said, it's likely to be leukemia. I was like, what?
Oh, God.
That's like not the diagnosis you're kind of expecting. I don't know what
No.
I was expecting. I was trying to think of that last night. Although I knew it was serious, I don't know what I expected it to be.
Yeah. It's probably a good job you didn't do some Googling because you'd have been panicking even worse than with that.
Yeah, well, even at that, I mean, at that point, didn't know what leukemia. Well, I knew it was kind of blood cancer, I guess, but I didn't know what, the prognosis was or anything like that. So it was a big shock. Again, the signs were obvious if we'd have known. And I've said to friends since, you're taught to look out for meningitis and the signs for that. You're taught to look out for sepsis and the signs for that. But childhood cancer is a lot more common than people think, and the signs are quite obvious. So all our signs were textbook, such as the tiredness, the aching legs, the cough that wouldn't go, and especially the bruise. Again, this is where we were lucky. The doctor that we first saw, our local GP, he'd done a year in paediatric oncology.
Oh, right.
And so he didn't say he thought it was leukemia, but he knew what it was likely to be.
Yeah.
And if he hadn't had that year's experience, you know, he might have just sent us home and said, you know, it's a cough, look after it for the weekend and so on. So it shows, you know, how lucky Isabel was and how lucky we were in terms of getting her quickly diagnosed and so on. So, yeah, we had it all confirmed within a couple of hours of being in Barnstable through a blood test. And I think she had a blood transfusion and platelets that evening. And so the leukemia is basically where her body was producing immature white blood cells, which was meaning her blood counts were down low and her own and platelets were low. Basically, the body just goes into overproduction of creating too many white young white blood cells, which is why she had to have the blood transfusion and the platelets. And it was really strange because as soon as she had the blood transfusion, she perked up.
Oh, right.
It was like almost an instantaneous thing.
Yeah. I was going to ask how was she coping with it all? It must have been terrifying for her.
It kind of was, but she was kind of so tired. And I think she kind of knew she wasn't right as well. Mm. And so probably the most stressful part initially was having a cannula put in. So she'd not really had any injections or she had them like boosters and vaccinations and stuff. But you can kind of look away for that. Mm-hmm. But when you're having a cannula put into your hand, it's kind of right in front of you, isn't it? So yeah. It's a lot easier to peek at, I guess. And it's a lot longer process, a bit of a longer process to do it. So yeah, the diagnosis of leukemia. Again, I did a bit of research that night in hospital, on Google, and it all depended on what type of leukemia it was as to what, you know, Isabel's prognosis was going to be long term. But we didn't. We were in Barnstable for 2 days because, again, you know, if a child is diagnosed with a cancer, the main treatment centre for the southwest is Bristol. So we were waiting for a bed on the, you know, children's oncology ward to become available. So we were waiting in Bristol for a couple of days. And that was one of the most frustrating bits of it. We were like, you know, we want to get up there. We want to get started with the treatment and so on.
Yeah.
And kind of thinking, well, if we're stuck in Bristol and she's not getting the treatment as quickly as she could, is it going to get worse and so on? But they reassured us. They said, you know, we work closely with Bristol. They're in charge of a treatment. They dictate to us basically what is done. So that was kind of reassuring.
And so
we waited 2 days. I think we went up on the Monday. And again, that was ambulance for Isabel, blue lights all the way up the M5. And we were there for 2 weeks. And again, it's almost like Charlie's incident was a warm-up episode for Isabel's. So this time we stayed at a Click Sergeant house, which is Click stands for Children with Leukemia and Cancer. So there's a house up in Bristol near the hospital with about 14, 15 rooms in, I think, so that all the families who have children there being treated have somewhere to stay close by. Because it's likely that you're either going to be there for 2 weeks, which is a very minimum, which we're there, or, you know, it could be 6 to 12 months or even potentially longer. So yeah, I remember just as we were about to leave, I think I plucked up the courage and asked the nurse, just to about to leave Barnstable, I said, do you know what type of leukemia it is? And she said, I can't say for definite, but the first signs are that it's, I can't remember what the specific terms it was now, but it was the most common and treatable type. And so again, you know, taking small wins.
Yeah.
I was like, I know that's not a definite diagnosis, but if the signs are pointing that way, that's, you know, a relief. And so, yeah, we got to Bristol. It was kind of all systems go then. It was just like high dose chemotherapy. She had to have an operation on the Monday or maybe Tuesday to have a port put in, so she could have all this IV chemotherapy and antibiotics and stuff. And yeah, it was 2 weeks of intensive treatment, fluids going into her, all kinds of stuff, blood transfusion, platelets. You know, the treatment that she had was pretty amazing, to be honest.
Yeah. How were you and Soph coping with it at this stage, though? It must have been tough for you guys, especially with the other kids, you know.
Yeah, it was. So Charlie came with us because he was only 5 months old still at the time and breastfeeding, so he came with us. My mum had she moved down to, I think she might have moved down to Bude by then. Yeah, she had. So she was in Bude, and so Maggie stayed with her for the 2 weeks. And again, the nice thing about the Click Sergeant house is Isabel was allowed out at the weekend, actually, the first weekend we were there. And so they all came up and brought Megan with her. And it's a nice massive house with loads of toys in to play with and stuff like that, and a lovely garden. And so it was really nice just getting outside in the garden and Maggie being able to play with Charlie and Isabel again.
Yeah, that's nice.
It's from those small things that, you know, you take for granted all the time. But
yeah. So she was
so
in
yeah.
there. She was in there for two weeks, did you say, in that in the house?
2 weeks in Bristol Children's Oncology.
Yeah.
And we were staying in the house. Like one of us stayed, only one of us could stay with Isabel
right,
at night time. I think that was mostly me because, again, Charlie was breastfeeding and trying to keep Charlie, a little toddler, in hospital. And Isabel was trying to get rest, and so it wasn't ideal.
Yeah. Switching on and off the wrong machines.
Yeah, exactly. And so we kind of knew from diagnosis that this was going to be a long journey as well. So it's 2.5 years of treatment, 2.5 years of treatment for girls and about 3 for boys. Thankfully, it's not all in Bristol. So Exeter is our, they call it shared care. So again, it's all led from Bristol, the treatment that she has. But there's pediatric oncology doctors and nurses in Exeter. So we just have to travel there. After the initial 2 weeks, we spent most of our time in Exeter going back and forth, which is 3 hours there and back. So a lot of time driving. Mm. And the first 9 months was really intensive as well. So that was Exeter quite often, nearly every day. Many overnight stays as well. So obviously, but the chemotherapy wipes out her immune system. It clears her, so she had all the MMR vaccinations and so on, but it wipes that out as well, and chickenpox as well. So a few of the biggest risks for children who are undergoing this treatment are sepsis from any kind of bacterial infection, which your body would normally fight off, or measles and chickenpox.
Yeah.
So we were drilled that we have to take Isabel's temperature at least 3 times a day. So, you know, morning, afternoon, or lunchtime and evening, or even if you notice any kind of changes in her behavior or how she is, you know, take temperatures and really monitor her.
Yeah.
And if her temperature hits 38 or above, we have to rush her into hospital straight away. And they start her on antibiotics as though she had sepsis or was like had a bacterial infection that would lead to sepsis. And so during the first 9 months, because of some of the chemotherapy or treatments she had there, in some children, they just make their temperature spike. So
oh, God.
During this 4-week period, she was having this vincristine, I think it was. And her temperature would spike all the time. And it was just the drugs that was doing it.
Yeah.
Obviously, we had to treat it as though it was, you know, a potential sepsis infection and rush her into hospital.
Mm.
And as soon as she started on antibiotics, it was at least 3 days in hospital while they did blood tests to find out what it was.
Right.
And yeah, so again, because Soph was still, you know, breastfeeding Charlie and so on, it was often up to me to do that. And I don't mind it. I actually found it harder once Charlie was, you know, on a bottle and stuff. I can, you know, sympathize what Soph went through. It's difficult on both sides. But now when Isabel has a temperature, sometimes it'll be Soph that goes in with her. And it's really hard being around the house, you know, looking at Isabel's bedroom and stuff like that when she's not there.
Yeah, I can imagine. So you managed to do that backwards and forwards. How long was that going on for then with the back and forwards to Exeter?
So it finished about the second week of December, I think. Last year. So she's now on maintenance treatment, which is takes her all the way up to August 2019. And that's just chemotherapy tablets at home every night. And she has a weekly blood test, which a click sergeant nurse comes out to do to save us having to travel to Exeter all the time. And a monthly checkup at hospital just to give it a once over and check she's all doing well. So yeah, it was strange though, because like the first 9 months, I said, was really intense, but there was like a week or two off between treatment phases.
Yeah.
And so I did manage the billing stuff for sanity check, and the charging was all done just before Isabel was diagnosed. And so I think after the first, I can't remember whether it was a 4 to 6 week block of treatment, we had a couple of weeks off where we just had to go in, say, every other day to Exeter. And so I actually managed to get the billing turned on then. And that was actually the 12th of July. I wrote that down. 12th of July last year. And so that's when Sanity Check launched paid plans.
Yeah. I was going to say woohoo, but then it just seems like a bit...
It was interesting.
In the midst of everything going on.
In the midst of everything going on. But I tell you what, the work was such a nice... Didn't say nice. It was a good, great distraction.
Sure.
Yeah. During, you know, the week or two that we had off of having to go to hospital all the time.
Yeah.
And so it's nice to be able to... It was an interesting... Not to experiment, but an interesting process of, you know, picking the tasks that I really needed to get done as well.
Right.
Because I know we talk about procrastination, or we have done so much on the podcast.
Yeah.
You know, when you know you've only got 2 days before the next treatment cycle starts and stuff like that, you know, you've really got to be very careful about what you pick to get done.
Absolutely. And work on.
So
Nothing like focusing the mind, by the sounds of
it
it.
was a good exercise in focusing the mind, and yeah, so it was good. I was glad I got paid plans launched. There was initial, I wouldn't say flood of subscriptions, but from the beta customers that were on the system from the 7 or 8 months that it was running as a beta, got a few customers. The couple of milestones that I've noted down. So, I mean, July was when 2017 was when we launched paid plans. It took until April 2018 to get to $1,000 monthly recurring revenue,
So
which was.
what was available in the product on in July then? So obviously not that much development would have gone on, I guess, because of all the, everything you had to deal with.
No, I guess, yeah, it initially launched as a beta just with the standard Bootstrap template, didn't it? And then I bought a Bootstrap template and used that. I think it's the Itspinio one or whatever it's called that most people use for this type of app with a dashboard and so on. And so it had that. It looked relatively professional. I can't remember and go back and look. I could look in GitHub, I guess, but I can't remember exactly what feature set it had. But it was enough. I mean, at that point as well, the archiving was, I guess, one of the big bits of functionality. Because Search Console only had 3 months worth of data available. That's changed since then, since January this year. And so I've added other bits and pieces as time has gone on, as time has allowed. And so probably the most useful parts are, the SEO testing functionality that's in there now, the daily speed test, the content ideas that it generates from the query data it's archiving and so on. So it took like, I'm guessing 10 months to get up to $1,000 MMR, but then only up to September this year it's doubled to 2,000 MRR, sorry, monthly recurring revenue. But that's only taken, 5 months or so,
That's
whereas
really
initially.
good. I was thinking, turning page on in July and getting beta customers to convert, that's kind of the first big tick in the box, isn't it, really? That people that are using it already are prepared to pay you, then that's good validation straight out.
Yeah, it was good. I guess I'd always been, I can't remember when I started sending out newsletters and stuff, but the first beta customers were friends as much as anything as well. And so I put together a newsletter and I explained the whole situation with Isabel in the newsletter and kept people updated with how she was doing and stuff, mostly because I wanted to kind of explain, why progress might be a bit slow on new features and things like that. And just to share the story as much as anything else that, you always hear about the people who launch SaaS products and do really well, and I kind of wanted to show that it's not all a bed of roses, and it's not always straightforward, and life doesn't always go as you expect it to.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you had just about the biggest curveball you can get, really, with that, didn't you?
And even though things were pretty bad at certain times and stuff, like I said, when you do get a day or two here and there, or a week or two here and there, if you do focus, you can still get a lot of stuff done, which was good.
With all this going on, how did you deal with the stuff that, the day-to-day stuff that is such a pain at the best of times, admin and support and all that kind of stuff? What did you just kind of ignore it?
No, well, there was a fair bit. Well, there's two things, I guess, comments to make around that. When you've got a 4-year-old in hospital who's got to stay in hospital, isn't allowed to move anywhere, or is only allowed to play to the playroom, it is quite tiring entertaining that 4-year-old. And so during the day, it was quite tough. And even, because of some of the fluids and drugs she was on, had glucose in. So sometimes she'd be up till midnight wanting to do stuff and play and things like that. So that was a challenge within itself. But then, there was also, she'd have sleeps during the day, and Isabel would have sleeps during the day and stuff. And so there were times when I could open my laptop and reply to emails and get bits and pieces of marketing done. So it really was just working when the opportunity was available, really. And again, having that time when you are just sitting there with Isabel is a lot of thinking time. So you can do a lot of planning in your head. You don't always have to be at the grindstone working away. It sometimes is good. And that's why, people say take time away from the keyboard, because even though you're away, you can get a lot of thinking done then and prioritizing in your head of what needs to get done. So there certainly was a lot of that going on.
So at least so you can keep on top of it even with everything else going on, yeah.
Yeah. And like I say, it was a nice distraction as well from what was going on. Nothing worse than, I guess, sitting there and, letting your thoughts run away and thinking of bad things that can happen and so on, as you can imagine you potentially do.
So how did you get then from the initial turning on the payments to the first 1,000 MRR? Because it didn't take that long even, really, did it? Was it What kind of marketing and stuff did you do?
So the main thing that has worked is paid advertising on Twitter. So there's quite a good SEO community on Twitter. So straight from the get-go, I started promoting tweets on there and targeting via lookalike audiences and stuff. I experimented with other bits and pieces like Google Ads, which has been limitedly successful. Facebook ads I've never been able to get to work. I think that's mostly because I haven't invested enough time in them, because I see so many other kind of SaaS companies and SEO companies all over Facebook that I figure they must be making them work.
Yeah.
Whether, again, this is just making a big assumption or not and they're just pouring money away, you know, I guess. Although you'd hope they'd be doing their analysis to make sure it worked. So at some point I do want to revisit Facebook. But as much personal recommendations and stuff like that. So again, there is a good community of people around SEO and people do talk to each other and tweet about things they find they really like.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I can't thank people enough for who've mentioned Sanity Check and so on to their friends and colleagues and in that way. There's a couple of things I've invested in. Again, so because I guess I've been able to earn a living from other bits and pieces that I do, like the Voucher Codes website and, you know, selling shares in previous companies and so on. I don't have to use the money from Sanity Check to live off, I guess. So I could invest it back in the business. Mm-hmm. Which is why when it was kind of started turning, making revenue, I was quite happy to put a majority of that back into paid advertising to figure it out.
Sure.
Which when the numbers are slightly bigger with paid advertising, you know, it's easier to work out what's working and what's not working. You know, it'd be better to put £1,000 in, I guess, in a week rather than doing £1 a day over a longer period of time.
Find out quicker what's working and what's not.
Exactly, yeah. So yeah, I was happy to put into paid advertising. I invested in getting a proper marketing website design done, which Steve at The Hive and Big Ideas did. The tough thing around that was, so I released that new design in January, and that was just exactly the same time as Google increased the archive that they had in Search Console to 18 months.
Excellent.
But that kind of took away what initially was the biggest selling point of Sanity Check of saying, hey, we can archive your data. But it's made me focus on the other bits and pieces of Sanity Check that are important and are good. And also for the big customers who pay the most for Sanity Check, they still want data more than 18 months. So the archiving functionality is still good for those guys,
which is
good.
Yeah, that's good. Sorry. I was just going to say, you know, at MicroConf, I was talking to several people that were interested in doing more around SEO and stuff. And I recommended your products a few times. And one guy I know, I think he signed up for a trial and he came back to me the next day and said, it was awesome. He said, that product's really, really good. It's exactly what I was looking for. So, you know, that's obviously, you're ticking the right boxes.
Well, that's good. Yeah, it was interesting, the comment he made about raising prices as well. Which
he did, yeah. Yeah, he said you need to raise your prices.
Which I'll come back to in a second. But the second thing I've recently invested in is copywriting. And so I got Joel from casestudybuddy.com to go over the site. And he does video teardowns of landing pages and people's sites and all the copy and all that kind of stuff. And so I made quite a number of changes to the marketing site based on that. And that's been good. I got a follow-up phone call with him later on this evening, actually, which will be good for work sweeps and bits on that. So again, because I guess I'm in a lucky position where I don't need the revenue from Sanity Check to live off, that I'm happy to invest it back into the business. Once I do get a customer, because it's archiving data, the churn has been really low, which is good. So again, I don't mind investing in paid advertising to get customers because they're going to stick around for a long time. So yeah, the lifetime value of customers is good.
So what effect then, you obviously redesigned the website and started to do some more content, etc. What effect has that had in terms of where your leads come from? Have you got more coming through, you know, Google search or direct to the website, more organic results?
Yeah, there's certainly a number that come from organic, but still Twitter is the main source of leads. And also, you know, there has been periods when there's been a delay in new features because of hospital appointments and so on. And you can certainly see the drop in new signups because, you know, there's, what's it called with ads, where they age and they become less useful or less, they do less well.
Oh, I don't know.
I can't remember what the term is.
I know what you mean.
But there's certainly that. And so when I do release new features and send out an email newsletter, I always get a customer or two from that. And, you know, that has the ability then to be able to promote new features and on Twitter and, you know, boost those tweets and so on. And they always, you know, bring in a raft of new trials and customers and so on. So, you know, it is important to keep the new features coming out and have new things to talk about.
Yeah.
And it also keeps, you know, existing customers around. I would say a lot of the early customers have bought into Silency Check, as you know, from be it staying along with the journey, I guess, of bootstrapping a product and keeping up with that, because I've always been open on in terms of how the product's coming along and where it's going and stuff, and the revenue. I've always posted that either in the email newsletter or on, I've started mostly doing that on Twitter now, each at the end of each month.
Right.
So yeah, I was going to say, I tried raising prices. I say we come back to pricing.
Okay.
When the new marketing site went live in January, I bumped prices up then. But unfortunately, that was around the time that, that the Google Search Console update of 18 months worth of data came out. So I think that would have hit trials and new customers anyway, initially, while customers figured out what the new Search Console experience was like. But then obviously increasing prices, I thought, well, that's probably two hits at the same time. It was a bit too much. So I think I left them for about a month and then put the prices back down. But I'm at the point now where I think I'm going to increase them again.
Mm. It sounds like that's a good idea. I think there's an intriguing problem there with the different kind of customers that you've got as well, because I think you've already said you have some customers that are agencies that have lots of domains.
Mm.
And then there are other customers, like the guy I spoke to at MicroConf, who is just a single company, so a single domain. How does your pricing work around that?
Well, yeah, one of the reasons, again, for starting Silency Check was I wanted to build a tool that was affordable to people like me and you. Because if you look at a lot of the SEO tools, you know, their entry level is $60 or $100 a month.
Yeah.
For someone who's bootstrapping their SaaS idea, you know, that's just out of reach, really.
Yeah.
And so I did want to be able to build something that can help us guys. And that's why the $10 a month price point, you know, how I got to that. I guess this is also, you know, it scales up. So it goes $10 for the small plan or standard plan. It's $25 for the medium one and $50 for the top one. You know, just thinking out loud now as I'm talking, I guess one of the reasons I wanted to raise the $10 plan and the other ones up as well was because there is a bit of admin. And as you know, admin takes time and so on.
Oh, yes.
But, you know, now I'm thinking, you know, I do still want to have a plan that's accessible to, you know, people like me and you that want to do some SEO, but it's not, you know, what we spend most of our time on. Mm. So maybe I just need to iron out those admin bits and pieces and make that easier or less time consuming for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's certainly my approach.
Cause again, with the price and the way it is, it's because it is $10 a month as a starter package. That certainly, I mean, no doubt in my mind, that's why churn is so low. Because if someone isn't, even if you don't look at SEO, perhaps it's something you only look at once a quarter, you know, you wouldn't mind $10 a month going out. Mm. It's kind of that kind of thing where it's, if it was $50 a month going out, you know, you'd notice it and it would hurt a little bit and you'd cancel it when you perhaps don't need it. But as it's $10 a month, you kind of just leave it ticking over. And when you do want to spend a bit of time on SEO, it's ready there for you to work with.
Yeah. And the accumulated data that you get over that time is worth it, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah, as we know, pricing's the hardest thing, isn't it? One of the hardest things. After getting a good idea and executing the pricing.
I'd say naming is pretty difficult as well.
And naming.
You've got sort of Google Ads, you've got organic search coming in, giving you leads. How do you deal with those leads? Are they all 100% self-sign-up, self-everything, or do you get on a call with anybody? What sort of things do you do?
Yeah, so I've got Intercom is running on the site. So as soon as they register, you know, they get the introduction email and a link to various support articles to try and help them make the most of the product. An Intercom bubble will pop up offering a demo as well.
Cool.
So I can do an online demo with Zoom. After 7 days, an email goes out. And then, you know, there's the usual countdown from 11, 12, 13, 14, you know, end of trial thing. Mm. So yeah, I did the demos were interesting because I offered them kind of anytime 9 to 5. And I think you found this, whereas if you do that, you know, you'll get demos booked at odd and random times. Mm. And it's quite disruptive to your day and flow of wanting to get bigger tasks done.
Yeah.
I also had an issue with people just with signing up and just not turning up, which, you know, for some reason, I always feel like I need an hour to prepare for a demo or half an hour before, you know, a demo takes place. And if you take that time to prepare, and then someone doesn't show up, it's pretty frustrating.
It is, yeah.
And so I went to just quite restrictive slots. So I think at the moment I've got it only Tuesday afternoon and Thursday afternoon. Mm-hmm. But that's massively cut back on the number of demo requests I have. So I don't know what the optimal thing is for that, whether to open it back up again.
So what I did with demos, I did a similar thing where I reduced it to just 2 or 3 afternoons a week. And then I got a few people complaining that they can only do it in the morning, for example, you know, or something like that. So in the end, I've gone to 2 days a week. So I open 2 days of the week for demos, and that seems to work okay. I get it does spread them out, you know, so I tend to get more in the morning actually than in the afternoon. But the thing about preparing for the demo, I think once you've done, you know, 10, 20 or whatever, and you've got a sort of standard patter, I just rock up now and then. I've usually got an... So what I do, my process is that they book a Calendly appointment in my diary. I get a notification email, and then I'll email them straight away with a standard email. You know, thanks for booking a demo. What is it that you're most interested in?
Mm.
And also in my case, I ask them what types of clubs they run as well, so I've got an idea before the call. And then all I do is I look at that email 5 minutes before the call, and then use that to, you know what to talk about them off the bat. And that's it, basically. So I just rock up and then I do it.
Yeah, I guess, well, from your timing perspective, all your customers are UK-based, aren't they? So
yeah,
that's why mornings work. I chose the afternoons because I thought that would cover, help, you know, cover most of Europe and sure. US as well then.
Yeah, fair enough.
A thing for me as well, and this is my own fault, is that I like doing demos at home, up in the office, quiet, with no one else around. So often for demos, I'd be in the hive working away, and then, you know, I'd come home specifically to do that demo. I guess that's why it annoyed me even more when people didn't bother to show up.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah,
that's half my own fault for wanting to come home to do demos and being, you know.
I never do demos anywhere but home.
Yeah,
for the same reasons, I think.
There you go. I guess that's good. It. That's the review of my last 18 months or so.
Yeah. Well, I said before, but I'm sorry to hear all the stuff you've had to go through, and I'm glad that everybody seems to be on the mend.
Yes. Yeah. We've still got a while to go with Isabel. Charlie still has chest issues, so he's probably in the doctors every 3 months getting steroids and antibiotics and so on. But it's funny as well, because obviously we moved down to Bude to try and have a healthier, more active life.
Yeah. And, well, that can only benefit you. It can only benefit you from now on, though, isn't it? Now everyone is getting healthy again. That's
true. And I've had a discussion with Sophie. I said, you know, knowing what we know now with our children, would we still have moved to Bude? And just although we've spent so much time in hospital, you know, the one weekend when we are out and we do get to go for a walk along the coast and stuff, we kind of do say that has made it worthwhile.
Yeah.
So, yeah, still glad we're down here.
That's good. That's excellent.
And we've made the most of the NHS as well.
Yeah, that's right. Years. Got your money's worth. Yeah,
definitely.
So the only thing I can think about asking you really is what the plans are from now. So you've got revenue up to where it is. Have you got a target in mind, or are you just going to keep going?
Keep plugging away. So I literally only over the past few days, things may have changed. And so this is why thoughts are still in motion a bit, I guess. And so I've had the opportunity where a person in the co-working space does lots of web design and e-commerce projects, and they're always asked by their clients to do SEO work around them. Mm-hmm. And they've always said no up to now, but it's been badgering me, going, you know, do you want to do this SEO work, do you want to do this consultancy, so on. And they're quite big sites as well, so you know, when you are looking at it, it's $10 each new customer, or $50 if they want to take on the large plan, but you can be charging, you know, x amount per day consulting. I finally come to the point where I said, yeah, you know, I'm going to do some SEO consulting. So the daily rate of money will be nice, but also it's going to be nice to get back to using Sanity Check as my own tool, which I'm really looking forward to.
Sure.
So, you know, I initially built it to help me with my own websites and my own projects.
Yeah.
Now, as Sanity Check has, I guess, become more successful and got more customers, I've just spent time working on Sanity Check. I've not been working on those other sites and using Sanity Check as a tool for those other sites as much. So I'm really excited about getting back to using Sanity Check as a customer, I guess, and seeing where I can improve the product from a customer's point of view directly. And that's also where I thought about raising the prices as well, because if I'm going to have more income coming in from the daily consulting rate, I can raise prices. And if it cuts down on, you know, the number of new customers we get per month, I don't mind that, because first of all, I'll have the income coming from the consulting. And secondly, you know, the rate or the revenue per customer will go up for Sanity Check in theory. But as I said, you know, just now, it's all thoughts in motion still at the moment, because I still do like having a product that is accessible to everybody.
Mm.
So I don't know. I don't know the answer.
No, it's a difficult one. You've got people signing up and moving along, so that's just going to be good as it is. And then you've got a bit of time, haven't you, really, to sort that sort of question out.
Mm. Yeah. But that's it. Got new features. A whole. I did do an expert. Did do a thing where I used Feature Upvote, which is another SaaS tool where you can add all your features, and I did it just for customers so they could go in and vote on which features they wanted to be developed next.
Oh, right.
Add in their own ideas and so on. So I did that back in May, I think, around then. So I've got a big long list of things to develop. And so it's just a case of finding the time to build them, do some marketing, now do some SEO consulting and everything else that's going on.
Yeah.
But
sounds good. Well, you'll certainly be keeping yourself busy, by the sounds of it.
Busy and out of trouble. That's the whole idea.
Well, I guess that's quite a long episode already, but it's a lot to cover there with everything that's been going on.
Yeah, it's crikey. It's nearly an hour. Sorry, everybody.
No, that's good. So we're going to... We mentioned a plan of going back to our every 2 week routine that we had before.
Yes.
So stick with that. And I'm guessing that these two first ones will be released fairly quickly, one after the other.
Yep.
So we've got people to catch up, and then we'll record again in a couple of weeks, I suppose.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too.
Cool. Okay. All right, thanks, Martin.
Cheers, Nick. Speak to you soon.
See you later. Bye.
See you. Bye.